Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Goldbridge Saves Football and welcome back to Real Football. The Premier League's not back just yet, but we've got lots to talk about. Could Manchester United win the league? I don't know what idiot's talking about that, but Manchester United, I think, could finish above Liverpool, maybe Arsenal. Also, we want to talk about this with Will, who is next to me, and we'll speak in a moment. Is this the worst Premier League transfer window ever? And why is it the worst transfer window ever? As a segue to that, Will, you're going to give me some names for flop or not,
yeah,
which is basically tell people what it's all about.
Yeah, exactly. I think we're a little bit worried. I think we've had the mega transfer in Kylian Mbappe in the whole of the world. But then where are we looking next? I'm not, you know, Fabrizio, David Ornstein, get me excited. I know you're excited from a Man United fan, but what's next? Where are we looking? Blues are making more signings than anyone else.
And yet you didn't explain what a flop or not was, and that was what the segue was.
Oh,
amazing
sorry.
Stuff. So what flop or not will be is we're going to list 10 players from last summer transfer window and decide whether they were a flop or not. Also want to talk about Chelsea. Could they be in trouble? Enzo Fernandez certainly was in trouble last week, but are they really moving forward from the momentum of Pochettino at the end of last season? We've also got some of your questions as well coming in. I would say at least 3 people asked about this,
yeah,
which is a lot for us. Can you bring up the USA punditry issue? And I think what they're talking about here is it's shit, but also things like Bruno Fernandes' pass to Mainoo in the FA Cup final was apparently described by a US commentator as a mishit shot, and also bitterness from ex-players that we wouldn't even put on the radio over here. So you are maybe an issue there. Lots to get involved in, but we're going to start off with Manchester United, a team that is close to my heart, and I know yours, Will.
Yeah, sorry, I'm back in the room now, sort of was listening to you but glazing over, which I don't normally do because obviously you make some fantastic points, but I'm here, I'm present, and Man United are ready to go, aren't they? I mean, you're excited. I just don't understand where this money's coming from.
Well, Niall, our producer, was talking about this before, and I did say maybe we could replace him with Will, but Will contractually has got to be on the show. So, Niall, I will read your point out, which was, why are Manchester United spending all this money? Why are Liverpool not doing it? Why are Arsenal not doing it? Why are Man City not doing it? Are Manchester United the new Chelsea, where they're chucking this money around at Yoro and Xerxes and Ugarte? Why is nobody else doing it? And also, the flip side of that is the Premier League's not that far away from starting and nobody's really doing any business, especially Liverpool with a new coach. And where does that put Man United in the pecking order for the new season? Yep, there's still a few weeks to go and we'll have Premier League predictions closer to that. We've also got our fancy Premier League stuff that we shall tell you about in a moment. But why do you think, and where would you put Man United at the moment? They finished 8th. Where are you putting Man United now, considering Villa were fourth, Spurs 5th, I forget everybody else, Man United 8th?
Stability and consistency, I think, are key. Like, we've seen it so much with Klopp, Pep, Arteta showing the fruits of that labour at Arsenal, and having that third year with Ten Hag, not only does that provide that as well, it's just the positivity around it.
Great
I mean,
point.
Think how positive you were. After a few drinks last season, you predicted Man United to win the Champions League.
Yeah.
And that was with a few jars. Imagine having them same drinks this year with everything that else is going on. I really think third place is locked on for you guys because everything is smart, sensible. I think the way the club, it just feels like the club's being run how a club should be run. And which is crazy to say, the mismanagement obviously that the Glazers and everyone else has done, but Ineos have come in obviously from off the pitch, on the pitch, it just all feels right, which in turn just this constant cycle of like positivity for the fans, which breeds into the signings, and you know, Xerxes coming in, Yoro stealing him from everyone that you did. So I just think there's a lot to be actually happy about as a Manchester United fan, which you've got a wry smile on your face, haven't you? Which is nice to see.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I just think I will do my Premier League predictions on That's Football Drunk again.
That should be the yearly thing.
Yeah,
maybe do it live from the Forest going forward.
Yeah, and also if they want to sponsor that, get in contact. But I think you're right about Man United. I mean, they are very much what I would say Gary Lineker / Alan Shearer FC. If anyone's old enough to remember them, they scored a lot of tap-ins, and United have scored a lot of tap-ins since Ineos came in, which they must be given credit for because you've got to be in the right position to score the tap-in. But for 10 years, we didn't do obvious things like director of football, CEO, buying the right type of players and the right sort of profile. And I'd agree. I think, look, I don't want to put too much pressure onto Manchester United. I know some people are saying win the league. For me, Man City and Arsenal are still miles ahead. But I do sort of look at the Liverpool situation, and I would automatically say Liverpool third because of the squad and what Klopp did last year, even with a new manager. But I think Man United and Liverpool, that could be an interesting battle. And I would certainly say that would be probably my top four if I had to call it now. I think Villa with the Champions League and the squad, tough. Spurs are Spurs. Chelsea we're going to talk about. So I think I would say Man United and Liverpool for third would complete the top four if I had to say now.
Yeah, and again, but it ties into just that constant progression, doesn't it? We spoke with Ten Hag, like this year needs to be an improvement on the first 2 years. So obviously he's sort of made a rod to his own back with the domestic trophies. But like if he can keep get Man United in Champions League again this season, especially if it's third and you've beaten Liverpool, even that's a sort of an achievement in itself, isn't it? Being able to beat them from where they've come from. Liverpool, it just feels a little bit. I think the biggest thing for them is keeping the player. Like, there's so much rumours around Van Dijk, wasn't there? Around, there's been rumours.
But like
around
a new signing.
Exactly. So, like a new signing. So, if they.
Liverpool fans will be screaming about that because I, as a Man United fan, we used to get this. Like, Martial's just signed a new contract, and the club would even sort of say, it's a bit like a new signing. It's not like a new signing.
No, not
He's
Martial.
Been here for bloody years. Yeah. Getting us a new signing.
But I was thinking, because we were doing Flop or Not, and obviously Darwin Nunes has been there for 2 years, but there's like players like him that need to have that season this year where it's like, I am number nine. Or
but I think keeping Salah when it looks like he will stay, I hate to say this to you Liverpool fans, it's like a new signing. Yeah. It is. And Van Dijk and maybe even Trent. So, and that stability, I think what you say is right. And I think I remember us talking about this on the podcast towards the end of last season about Chelsea. I was stunned that they didn't stick with Pochettino because there was a momentum. The players were getting on board. You add to that momentum and you come into this season with momentum that maybe Newcastle and Man United now have, whereas Chelsea are starting again. And I think that Liverpool are starting again with Slot, in a sense. Momentum could be really big because consistency is always key. And when I look at Manchester United, that third year for Ten Hag, although there's a lot of change, there is a lot of consistency building over.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is why I think it's a big season for them. But, I mean, just on the league, Man United, to win the league, for me, would have to replicate a Leicester, which I know people will say, well, that's ridiculous. But I think that's the enormity of the challenge to try and topple a Man City for this year, at least.
Yeah, but
I'd love them to do it.
I think there's teams in better places to take points off Man City than we had last season.
Mm.
Like, with, I think Manchester United did the right thing in terms of looking for that other manager. I think the wrong thing was obviously it came out when it did. And like, if you can keep that internal, like, they explored other options, they didn't find the right one and kept Ten Hag going, which after the year he had is the right thing to do. So it just breeds confidence that way, doesn't it? Like, they're doing the right things, like with the players and even with the Branthwaite deal, wasn't it? I know you've gone into it in depth on the United stand. Like, they're not being held to ransom with some of these things. And it, like, you look, we speak about Chelsea. It's, I think Chelsea and Newcastle are almost in similar boats where, like, Eddie Howe's going to go, but then they've still...
You think he'll go to England?
I think he'll go to England. I think we'll come on to that in a bit. But, like, they're looking at their next manager, right? They're probably going to get linked with the likes of Zidane and stuff. But then if someone like Zidane's coming into a Newcastle side and he's got Dan Byrne to deal with at left back, Sean Longstaff in midfield. Like, I know they have got quality players, but they're not at that stage yet, are they?
No.
Whereas Chelsea have bought in Enzo Maresku from Leicester, and like, there's already rumours that Cole Palmer wants to leave because he doesn't want to be coached by a player of that, a coach of that level. So it just feels like there's so, in that midfield, there's so much. It's a bit like the F1, isn't there, battling around trying to get up and tight.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting where Newcastle go next. But I think with look, What I will say about Man United and those people who are saying they could win the league, two things. One, it's ridiculous because you're putting a lot of pressure on a team and a manager that shouldn't be judged on that. I agree with Will, it should be Champions League football and maybe a trophy. But secondly, the year that Arsenal challenged Man City the first year, in that summer, people were probably saying the same thing about Man United now. Yeah. You know, you can suddenly take that step up. Consistency is the king. If you can start winning week in, week out, then, you know, nothing's impossible. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But going back to the point, I am sort of in agreement here that this transfer window, and I did a video on That's Football about it, what's going on last week. It's really weird. It is a bit weird how there is a real lack of transfer activity amongst the top eight for Manchester United. I know for the Premier League, sorry. Manchester United have done well. We've spoken about them. Villa have done a little bit. Spurs done a little bit. Chelsea done a little bit. But Man City, Arsenal, Liverpool haven't really done anything. And I just don't believe that's a coincidence. I don't believe all three clubs and everyone else are going, we're happy with what we've got. I think there is a more sinister twist to this. And I think it's probably FFP. And if FFP, I'd be interested to see what people think in the comments and you, if financial fair play is the reason that this transfer window is a little bit lackluster, then it's not doing its job. We're diluting the quality of football because the summer transfer window, you know, we grew up on it, teletext, whatever. That's a massive part of the enjoyment of football.
Yeah.
And you know, it's all right going, well, you know, for the good of the game and the finance, fuck off. Like, literally, this needs to change because this is a boring window.
Yeah.
Apart from Man United, and like, which is great.
I would take my blue hat off. Aston Villa have just qualified for the Champions League and they're having to sell their best player.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't fundamentally agree with that. And I know they're bringing in Onana to sort of replace him if that
they
is.
They should be keeping Luiz and buying Onana. And then actually, it's a great point. Yeah, they've just replaced him.
Because you should be going like that. You think back in the day, you remember when Spurs got Champions League with Harry, it was almost like a new dawn, wasn't it? It's like, brilliant. We're Champions League now. We're at this level. We've got X amount to spend and we can hopefully stay in there, bring these new players in. Whereas now it almost feels like you're being punished for trying to go forward with your team, doesn't it? Like, who have they signed? They signed, it's not confirmed yet, Ian Mattson. Mm. And then you go blind, that is youngsters, like the Lewis Dobbin deal they did with, I think that was for FFPP as well. So it just feels a bit like everyone's having to be too smart, whereas, you know, like
Arsenal, Newcastle have done nothing really.
No, well, yeah, but if
free signing from Bournemouth.
If they can keep Bruno Guimaraes, Mark, that's almost like a new sign in itself.
But even Bruno Guimaraes was meant to be going to Man City.
Yeah.
Like it's just like, look, we probably will get business late on in the window.
I don't think it'll be big business though, will it?
But I always think that, look, Man United are doing good business, really, really good business, but I'm stunned we're the only ones doing it because the league starts soon and no football club, whether you're Arsenal, Liverpool, Man City, Newcastle, wants to be doing business once the season started because then you're sort of disrupting your season. So this, whether people want to wake up to it or not, we've spoken about VAR, we've spoken about added time, we've spoken about the increase in injuries and people can sweep that under the carpet or not, but we need to bring this in. This transfer window is not being discussed about, and I don't know whether it's because of the Euros and people are tired from that and they were busy, but the top journalists are not talking about the fact that this transfer window is falling off big time and clubs are not as active as they used to be. And if it's because of financial fair play, of which I'm a big advocate of, there are issues with it if you're limiting clubs from spending. And Aston Villa would be a prime example of that because they're going to struggle. They're having to sell to buy and they're going to be playing more games. So therefore, the great job that Emery's done and the real excitement around Aston Villa is going to be more about how do we cope with all these games and we can't spend any money. It's just ridiculous.
Well, and even like, I know that's probably different, like Duran was getting linked to Chelsea and that's like a second strike. I know, I think he wanted to force the move. But also, just feel, you say about deals not happening, but also for the last couple of years, and I think Sir Jim pointed it out as well, like Man United are going down this route of like buying young because then they've got assets to sell further on. But it just feels like everybody's doing that. So then that just pumps up the market value to where someone like an Onana's going for 50 million from Everton to Aston Villa. And you've just got all these young players that are still not living out their potential. Could do, but you don't know. So it just feels everyone's in the same market trying to do the same thing. Whereas, you know, I love the film Moneyball with Brad Pitt.
Very good film.
Let's get a couple of 35-year-olds in. What's Luka Modric doing next season, Villa? Yeah. Get him in on a year deal. Let's have a bit of fun. Let's have a bit of football management because everyone's in the same market trying to buy these assets to get them up, to pump them on, to sell them on, and it just feels a little bit boring.
Well, I'll just drop this in here because there is an email I got from someone called James Linus who's very into his accountancy side of football, and he said to me, there may be a sinister side to all of this, Mark, in the sense that financial fair play is just a limitation on spending your money in the transfer window. It's not a limitation on your revenue. So basically, financial fair play stops people buying players.
Right.
But the money's still in the clubs.
Yeah.
And when the money's in the clubs, let's see how many clubs start taking dividends and stuff over the next few years. Because, oh, we can't spend it on an FFP. So actually, it could be a more sinister way for owners to be, you know, taking
lining
money
pocket,
out of the club.
Yeah.
So we'll have, you know, that could be a conspiracy theory. But the point is, financial fair play is restricting clubs. They weren't restricted last year. They weren't restricted the year before. So the money, Aston Villa do want to spend money,
yeah,
but they can't. Everton want to spend money, but they can't. That money's still there that you buy for your shirt or you buy for your season ticket or you get from Sky. It's still there.
Yeah.
It's not, clubs can't not spend.
Yeah.
They're not being allowed to spend. So where does that money go?
But then even like from, like we're trying to do it for a Blues level, but it just feels like the blueprint is like, get a bigger stadium, get people spending more money on corporate. Like, there just feels like everyone's trying to do exactly the same thing to get more revenue in. So then it's just like, well, if you're like a Luton Town, then like obviously they did succeed last year, but I think it just feels everyone's trying to do exactly the same thing because of these parameters that are put on a club. So I don't know, it just feels a little bit flat and a bit boring.
It feels like a flat summer transfer window, and I think we need to start shouting about it if you're listening in, because, you know, again, look at the promoted teams, Southampton, Ipswich, Leicester. Maybe they have bought a load of players because you don't tend to hear about it, but if they haven't, what's the plan to stay up?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Ivan Toney still at Brentford amazes me.
Yeah.
I mean, £50 million for a proven Premier League striker. I mean, he must walk around telling everyone to F off and, you know, shouting at dogs or something, because like,
oh, he's
got a bad attitude, like, because I don't get, like, he's a,
I thought you were just saying he was into that sort
but,
of stuff.
Maybe he is, but he's a proven Premier League striker. All right, maybe Arsenal don't fancy him, maybe Man United don't fancy him, but you're telling me Chelsea, Spurs,
yeah,
like, he would massively improve them, and yet they're struggling to offload him. And I don't think it's because of bad attitude. I think it's because FFP is very restrictive. So this is what we're here to do, say football. And I think the transfer window, you can't just go, it's a bit slow. It's not a bit slow. It's actually fell off. And I think a lot of people said, oh, it's because of June the 30th and the end of the financial year. We're now approaching the end of July and it's not changed.
And also, like, we banged on about this point before as well, but like, it's also given us this sort of world where Newcastle have got the money to spend. And again, you know, even Villa have exceeded their expectations by getting into the Champions League and they can't spend their money. And so it's like, it's just strengthening Manchester City even further, isn't it? Because no one can really compete with them. Like, we should be at a point now where Liverpool, Man United, Tottenham, Villa, obviously Chelsea, like, this season should be really one of the most competitive.
I don't think Arsenal have kicked on.
No.
They were very close to Man City. And if I was Arsenal, I'm sure Arteta has said it, get me a top-class striker, maybe another midfielder, and we can really push on. Mm. They've done neither.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is not, you know, as you say, for Man City, I'm looking at it and going, well, you know.
Because even Manchester City's quiet seasons, they're always doing, like, you know, a Nunez in the background.
I guarantee they will do. And then you look at Liverpool. I mean, I'm stunned by this. I mean, Liverpool didn't win the league.
Yeah.
They fell away. Klopp's gone. New manager. No signings.
Yeah.
Like, that is amazing. I mean, if Man United, I mean, look, Man United, Ten Hag said it himself, what Slot's inheriting is nothing the same. You know, Ten Hag inherited the worst ever Premier League Man United side. Slot's inheriting a team that fell away from nearly winning maybe two or three trophies instead of one. And maintaining the status quo is very important. And maybe Liverpool don't need a hell of a lot. But as a new coach, you should still... It's obvious you've got to bring two or three players in just so they're his men in the dressing room. And to not do that, it almost feels like a bit of a puppet, really. You go in and do that. We're happy with the squad we've got. It's weird.
Well, do you think that's linked to, like, the, obviously everyone speaks about the Edwards Klopp situation. Do you think that almost ties into that a little bit, where obviously he was coming back, they didn't get on previously. Mm. Now he's been brought in as that top dog.
It does feel like, at the moment, Slot's a bit of a puppet, where it's like, that's your squad,
same
get
for
on
Chelsea
with it.
As well, then.
Yeah, well, Chelsea's definitely that. I mean, look, I want to do this flop or not stuff, but...
Mark, if it's all right for you, I'd like to hear from our halftime sponsors.
Let's do Chelsea after that. I want to get into some of these flop or not.
Yeah.
So basically, we obviously are in a summer transfer window and we've got a load of players that are signing for clubs. Maybe not as many as we expected, but there will be. And there will be that feeling of, you know, will Lenny Yoro be a success at Manchester United or not? But there was a lot of signings last year that after a year, we thought, well, this would be great for content and also great for you to comment on. Flop or not after a year, and you're going to read some players out,
yeah.
and we're going to give our thoughts on a year later, whether they're a flop or not.
Yeah, lovely stuff that. And if you don't know how it works, basically they're a flop.
If they didn't do well.
Or if they did do well, they're not a flop.
Yeah.
So that's the basic premise of that format. We're starting with Arsenal.
Yeah.
We had a different few suggestions, but we're starting with Kai Havertz. A tale of two seasons, I think.
Yeah. Signed for Arsenal last year.
I mean, looking back then, at that time, everyone was... I mean, for that first 6 months, everyone was like, writ him off and going, we were right, up yours.
Yeah. I just remember that US tour thing he did where he was doing all the MLS sort of tricks and stuff, and he couldn't hit the ocean from a boat, could he? I still think Arsenal, to challenge Man City, need that sort of Ollie Watkins, you know, Erling Haaland sort of striker that's going to score you 20 Premier League goals. But Havertz did finish the season well. Certainly works better in a more advanced position. I wouldn't say he was a flop. I wouldn't say he's hot, but I've got to say flop or not. So I would say he's not a flop.
Wow.
Yeah, but if I was ranking him out of 10 as a transfer, probably give him a 7.
Well, I think another one in that one, we go to Manchester City next, is Guardiola. Because I think he had a very good season, but then being a sort of inverted fullback, it just doesn't really get your juices going, does it?
No, but look, I think when we did the Premier League team of the season, we had at left back
Dan Burn.
Adogi.
Yeah.
Adogi. Dan Burn, not last year, mate. But I think.
Remember Purvis Estupiñán,
yeah? Yeah, he fell off.
He fell off.
But Vardial, I think the last couple of months of the season, I would have put him in my. Certainly the last month was, you know, when he was scoring goals.
Oh, God, he'd scream every week, wouldn't it? Bernabeu at home.
For the price, £90 million, I think he was close to being a bit of a flop in his first season, but. Typically with Pep, you get used to the system and, you know, year one towards the end into year two, they're suddenly, you know, massive. I bet he'll have a great season this year. So he would not be a flop, in my opinion, because of the way he finished the season.
You know, I know it's not from last season, but you know, I think he's going to have a really good season next year.
Who?
Jack Grealish. I was nearly going to do, I was trying to do a Hellman's reference, but I think Jack Grealish, a year at home, baby on the way.
Year three?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but he had a good one in year
two.
No,
year four.
Year four, yeah.
Bloody hell, year four at Man City.
Yeah.
First year, crap. Year two was good. Year three wasn't so good.
So this is his good year.
Breaking news, Jack Grealish sold to Spurs.
Al-Ettihad.
Yeah.
Going down the table, you said this, and you told us you said this every time, the Liverpool midfield last year, unbelievable. Part of that was Szoboszlai, part of that was McAllister.
Yeah.
Let's start with Szoboszlai.
This is going to be difficult. I can see this as a clip. Szoboszlai, flop or not, last season. It's borderline, you know, because I think he had such a good... He's the opposite of Vardial and the previous player, Havertz. Like, he started really, really well, got injured, and then sort of struggled a little bit in the second half of the season, which I think is fair to say. So I think, similarly to Havertz and Vardial, I would say not a flop for the different reasons that he hit the ground running, which is difficult, but then I think he fell away a little bit. But that was probably injury, fatigue. Big second season for him, but I wouldn't say flop, so not a flop for me.
McAllister?
Oh, God. I mean, this was, we had Alexi McAllister down as a potential for player of the year up until about February, so...
And a potential interview.
Yeah, and we had... Yeah, what went wrong there? But fantastic player, really good season for Liverpool, and...
And the price mark, was cheap.
It was less than 40 million, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was 30 to start.
Yeah, 100% not a flop, and... I mean, look, that's the thing when you talk about Liverpool, what we were saying before, isn't it? You know, when you think about Szoboszlai, McAllister, they're two signings from last summer that you would expect to kick on this year, having had a year, then you add into the equation people like Kwanzaa and Bradley, who are young players who will be a year older.
Yeah.
They've still got Matip, who I think is coming back from injury, Konate, Van Dijk, Robertson was out for injury for a lot. They've still got Trent, Alisson, Salah.
I'd be interested if Trent goes into that three, or do they go out and try it? Because obviously they got Endo late, didn't they? And he was sort of covering that CDM slot. So do they go out and get another person?
Are Liverpool fans being a bit moany? It wouldn't be like them to be like that, but are Liverpool fans being a bit moany when you think about what we've just said there?
Yeah.
Still got a hell of a squad.
Yeah. And they've been spending a lot.
And they're not in... They're back in the Champions League, though.
Yeah.
Have they got the squad for that? I don't know. I think Liverpool could be a dark horse, actually.
Okay. Can I ask you to be fair and reasonable on this next choice?
Yes.
Take your red hat off.
Yeah.
Take your friendship hat off.
Yeah.
He goes by three names: Rasmus, Rasmus, Rasmus.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Mason Mount. Okay, Rasmus, definitely not a flop. Look, very, very difficult season at 20 years of age to come in at Man United. Obviously, Martial was injured all of the season, so he's had to, you know, work up front where you don't get any service. I think there were barren patches, which we've seen with Ronaldo, Cavani, Martial. It's a graveyard shift for Manchester United. But I think the highlights certainly obliterate the lowlights. And I'm just talking about his hair.
Yeah, lovely stuff.
But no, I think he finished the season with a couple of good goals, had that great run after I did the interview with him for about a month.
And that was
Should have done another interview. Yeah. You know, the Goldbridge magic does wear off.
Exactly.
Just ask Mrs. Goldbridge. And we've... No, under no circumstances can he be a flop, because also a young striker, he's going to get better. But again, a little bit like Szoboszlai, I think second season... certainly the jury is out.
He's just very likable as well, I think. He just, like, he's sort of that really traditional striker as well, and even I want to get behind him.
I think if he gets more service, that's the thing at Manchester United, creativity. And I think Xerxes coming in will also, strangely, I think as a striker, you're quite selfish, but I think he would want another striker to come in, because playing three games a week, long games... You know, you almost want it. Sometimes I think with 70 minutes, you put a shift in and you think, oh, yeah, actually, I don't mind coming off.
Well, how nice would it be if that? I know the way they play might not lend itself to this, but I mean, we go back in the day when I was a Red, your Yorkshire Coles, your Sheringham's, just having that plethora of strikers and how that worked for them back in the day. So,
yeah, and I think some people struggle with this in the modern day, is that, you know, even some United fans have said, who starts then, Xerxes or Rasmus? And you can almost sense the
either or.
Player FC, I want Xerxes. And I'm like, hold on a minute. When we were successful, you need a squad. And it's about, you know, if Rasmus scores a couple of goals and comes off, and then Xerxes comes on and scores two goals, great, you've got a decision to make.
It's like the F1 yesterday, isn't it? You want your two best drivers going for it. Norris versus Piastri.
Should he have pulled over?
We'll bring that to the F1 podcast.
I absolutely would not.
Yeah, I know you would. Ram into it.
I'm going to let him do it. On the last lap, we'll do it just for the effect.
Yeah.
Oh, the wind. Oh, I just lost. I forgot.
You brake test him straight into the back of you. Yeah. The man that I did, I think the first ever podcast that we did, because we've nearly been going a year together now.
Mm.
Some of us have had less relationships time than that. But I said Mason Mount flop of the season.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say Mason Mount. I think Mason Mount has to be a flop based on 12 months. I do believe that there's a redemption arc, in the sense that he's almost like a new signing. He's starting again. He's a flop because he barely played. I mean, I was saying yesterday on the United Stand, that number 7 shirt, we saw more of Fred the Red the Mascot than that. It's like he just didn't play because of injury. And then the big thing about Mount is, where does he actually fit into the team anyway? So... yeah, I mean, look, in a season where we had so many injuries, he unfortunately was one of those consistent injuries. So for £55 million, he has to be a flop if you're basing it on that season one. But there'll be people screaming saying, you can't call him a flop. He's, you know, he was injured. But that's the whole point. We're judging it on 12 months. So he would be classed as a flop for 12 months. But there is still a very good asterisk next to his name as to... it's not terminal.
No.
Like he can turn it around.
It's just crazy, the way you, in your head, you do PR on players, isn't it? Because obviously I've been mourning in the loss of Gareth Southgate. So I was watching all of the goals under his tenure every night for the last seven nights.
God, you must be depressed.
But like, obviously 2020, 2021, Mason Mount was like really a crucial part
Southgate
of that England.
Loved him.
So it's just, I don't, the drop off, but obviously because of injury, but then I still say injury is part of that transfer and part of that whole aura. Pretty easy on this, but we have to bring it up. Cole Palmer.
Yeah. What a not flop.
Lovely.
Be very interesting to see how he does at Chelsea, because I think we were going to talk about this. I do worry about Chelsea. I think that, well, I don't worry, don't support them, but I do look at Chelsea, and I think if they'd kept Poch, I actually genuinely think they would have had a better season. The Leicester manager could come in and be Ange or De Zerbi in year one. He could be a real, you know, hipster, but it's another reset for Chelsea. I don't trust their ownership. That's the thing. I don't trust their ownership. And I think their fans, although they won't admit it, I think they don't trust their ownership as well. So I think if things don't start well for Chelsea, and I'm sure the first game of the season's Man City or something like that, if it doesn't start well for them, you're straight on the, you know, you're playing catch up again. I think even as a player, you're only human, and they look at it and go, we were doing all right with Potts. She brought the new guy in. We're losing games. Mentality. He's still got a very big squad. I still look at that Chelsea team and I don't think it's very balanced. And I think Pochettino towards the end had done a good job of that. And talking about Cole Palmer, if you took Cole Palmer out of that team, or if Cole Palmer had had an okay first season, they'd be in massive trouble. The fact that he had such a good season sort of helped them end up in, you know, I know they ended up in the Europa League in the end, but they had a good, where did they finish, sixth or seventh?
I think they got sixth in the end. Yeah, they had that run.
It's not good for Chelsea, but actually from where they'd been most of the season, it was a good run.
Going into this year, if you go Chelsea finished sixth this year, I think everyone would go like, that's probably bang on the nose really, isn't it?
Yeah, and they might struggle for that, but I don't know. I've got a bad feeling about this season for Chelsea. And I've got a bad feeling about this coach. I mean, they're signing Dewsbury Hall, who obviously he had with him at Leicester. So is that bringing in a familiar face who knows the system? I just don't think
sometimes
it's exciting enough. What business have Chelsea done? I mean, I know they were part of the three-way with Everton and Villa, and or four-way with Newcastle. They sort of did a little bit of swappy, didn't they, to help each other out. But I don't really know what they ended up with out of that.
It's just like with, you know, even going back to Man United, like it feels like there's clear progression. So like how do you start? You're a year again behind, aren't you? Because you've got rid of Pochettino. So it's a blank slate. So what is progression? Sixth in a domestic cup? I don't really know. I just feel that they're very lost in the ether. Like what is next for Chelsea?
I think football's very simple, which is why we've got a podcast that does quite well. And I think that some owners get a lot of credit, respect and status and aura because they own a football club. But ultimately, they're not billionaires because they're good at football. They're billionaires because they're good at whatever gave them the money, whether it's their business or the inheritance.
Well,
that's
or whatever. Where the ego comes, isn't it? You're like, oh, I can do this on this. I can work in pharmaceuticals and then I'll become a footballer. He's already been voted off the board, hasn't he? Like he's got 2 years left. So it just shows how well-respected he is internally.
But what they don't understand about football, and we've mentioned it multiple times on the podcast today and over previous ones, is that momentum and consistency is what wins you trophies. Yeah. And if you keep hitting reset, you have to keep building again. And by hitting reset with Pochettino, they're building again. It might work. Maybe eventually you fall on the right guy. But if you look at Man City's success, Pep wasn't a reset. A lot of things were going on building towards a situation that Pep could come into. And I think that's the way to go. So, yeah, I think I was just trying to think. Well, Cole Palmer's definitely not a flop. Who was bought last year? Get in the comments.
Who was a flop? From Chelsea?
No, but you know, they're bloody loads, haven't they?
Yeah.
I mean, Lavia.
Yeah.
He's not kicked a ball.
Casado.
I think that, you know, we've got Malacia at Man United, but I think that's incredible to be a young player and that you've not played in a whole year. I mean, that's almost like going back to the late 80s when medical science just wasn't there. I mean, how do you miss a whole year of football?
Haven't they got rid of the ones at United now? There's two physios gone, because there was that big thing about...
Yeah, I think so. But who would you say was the biggest flop from last season then? We have not mentioned Declan Rice, who for me was not a flop.
Yeah. The only other ones I got down there were Doku from Manchester City, but I think he had an average short season.
Yeah, he wouldn't say a flop. He'd be borderline, but not a flop. No, I was trying to think who would be the biggest flop from that. Richarlison?
I think it was his second season. Yeah. James Maddison I had down. Sort of interesting. Injury derailed his season, but then that...
Bosley.
Yeah. Injury's always been there for Maddison, hasn't it?
I'm sure we're missing out. Can you think of any, Niall?
Yeah, I think we've covered all
there wasn't really any massive flops then. People would be screaming and shouting. Yeah.
Thomas Kaminski was a real great signing for Luton.
I feel like there's a signing that... Yeah, I mean, Onana, Man United. I don't really want to do Man United stuff because we've been really positive.
Who? Yeah, but even that was on a free, wasn't it? Or like
low. Chelsea must have bought people that flopped. They must have.
Well, I think Nkunku's got to be up there, hasn't he? Just because.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Just because of the bringing him in, obviously getting injured. But then again, that doesn't sell view of that point as well. I just felt, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a few like that, isn't there? Like Mason Mount. I don't think I think they can have good second seasons. But yeah, Nkunku, Lavia, Mount, massively.
I don't think we've got
prone.
The juicy sort of... You've had a honking season.
You're crap.
It's not the Jack Grealish £100 million coming in with such great promise off the back of an amazing year. But like,
yeah, there wasn't a player that got bought and you went, you watch him and week out and go, God, he's crap.
Yeah.
Like he's really crap. It's more injury. Who?
Caicedo was probably crap.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, he did all right in the...
I mean he gave away like 3 goals in his first 4 games, didn't he?
Yeah, just getting used to it. What do you think about... I mean, also Chelsea, just talking about Enzo Fernandez, that video, I know there's a sense of laughter there. It's more nervous laughter because I'm like, that is a shitstorm. Yeah. Quite rightly, Chelsea players have come out calling it racist. I mean, that's going to be a very interesting training session. I mean, there might also be, you know, probably quite rightly, some sort of fines, bans as well, because if you're UEFA or FIFA in this case... You can't have that.
No. Well, and you can't even say it's education, because this is a grown bloke going away. Like, and also he's sort of in that natural habitat there, so he's sort of shown his true colours there, really, hasn't he? Like, there does need to be more education, but you'd hope a man in that position would sort of know that that's not right. And, you know, just from the personal one-to-one basis, if you've got these teammates in the dressing room, you should just think, well, surely there's a bit more compassion there, just a bit more, I don't know, if you are teammates, friends... Just be fucking normal.
I think such a shame is the word I would use, and that's three. Such a shame, because you know, good footballer, and unfortunately, it's there, isn't it? Everyone can see and hear what's been done, and you know, Chelsea Football Club, I'm sure, will deal with it and in the modern way, and do the right things. But just it's a shame again. It's a bit like when England lost that final at Wembley, and we had all the racism towards Rashford, Sancho and Saka, didn't it? You didn't remember about the loss, really, because it became all about that, and it's a shame that that's back there again. I think the Chelsea players that came out and publicly called it out, fair play, really.
And I think that the main thing to do is back those players as well, because... I forgot
Fofana played for Chelsea again, another £80 million player that's been injured a lot.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that the main thing to do is back those players as well, because one, even still in the society, which it's not right, like you should be able to come out and what Fofana said be, you know, everyone backs it, where still you get murmurs and people going, well, I don't know this, but you just tell them to shut up.
I've seen this at United, though, sometimes because you like that player, no matter what they've done off the pitch, you try and find a way to defend them just because you like them as a player. And we have seen that with United, and that's wrong. Like, morally, that's wrong. Of course, Enzo Fernandez is still going to be a good player and he'll still play for Chelsea, but he must face the consequences of his actions and hopefully be educated on it. I mean, if he holds those views... Don't bloody sing about them, you know?
Well, did you see the Gordon Strachan clip was doing the rounds again from the 2014 World Cup? And I think they were just chatting about something normally, and Strachan went on this tirade, but it was absolutely true, just about like the moral levels in football. And he was just like, there's no one's got morals in football. Like, if they're a good player, they will get excuses and they will get, you know, everything handed to them just because they're good at football, where if it's a youth player who does the same thing, they'll be out on the back. He said it's obviously the most corrupt thing forward, and that was literally 10 years ago, and you think of the incidents in that space. So yeah, there's a lot of that. I think we turn a blind eye to it, everyone, sometimes because of the love for the game, and like it's in the wrong hands for a lot of the time.
We had it with Mason Greenwood, who this week is quite topical, has obviously gone to Marseille, and I remember at the time that broke out, and I used to call him a generational talent at Man United, and he was very, very talented. And then this came out and it was like it split the fan base. A lot of people were sort of wanting to move on from it, oh, let's get him back, he's brilliant. And then a lot of people were like, no, we don't want him back. And the thing I said at the time was, if he was a youth player who was never going to make it anyway, he'd been gone ages ago. Yeah. But because it's Mason Greenwood, who's a good player, it's sort of like this dilemma. And this is a bad thing about football, and Gordon Strachan was correct, is that I was literally saying this morning on the United Stand. We've got legends of this football club who in real life are wankers. Like, they are, but they're still legends. And I think that line, maybe younger people don't realise it and you learn it as you get older, is, you know, they're footballers. But I think some people want their favourite footballers also to be the guy that's going to come and play FIFA with them and come round for tea and, you know, go down the pub.
They become superheroes, don't they?
Well, and they're not. They're just human beings. And actually, the chances of them being a knobhead are probably more than them being a nice person, because from such a young age, everyone's wiped their arse for them, told them how great they are. And it's hard to be humble and have humility and morally correct when you don't have any boundaries. No. And a lot of these players don't. So, you know, we shouldn't be too hard on players, I think, when they constantly fuck up, because it's hard to not fuck up when everyone's telling you your boundaries are different to everybody else's.
But look at the pylon with Jude Bellingham at the moment. Like, you know, there's clips of him shaking hands with, and look how arrogant he is. I mean, he's shaking
about that? I mean, I saw like there's a picture of Cole Palmer sort of ignoring him. There was rumours that there's people in the dressing room that don't like him. And I was like, of course there's people in the dressing room that don't like him. Yeah, he's starting for England. He's the star player. The players that aren't starting have to be egotistical. If I'm not using Cole Palmer, but if I'm player A for England and I've been sat on the bench and Bellingham's played all tournament, I'm sorry, I'd want to be there going, wanker.
Yeah.
You know, why have I not been picked? Because that's the hunger that takes them to where they are in their career.
And also, like, everyone was using this article from The Athletic and someone had quoted it and took it out, and that their tweet was like, Bellingham hated in the dressing room. And it didn't even say that.
No.
But then you just, obviously people just, and I've done it with different things, because if you have got a hatred towards him, you just want it to suit your narrative, don't you? But like, he's a player of, we've never seen it before, where his attitude is completely different, isn't it? And we're not used to that.
Someone who's like, he knows where the cameras are. That's why he's spotted the camera and then he's gone around picking them all up. And I'm like, no, I just think it's leadership. I think it's confidence. I think he wants to win things. But look, I think if you haven't got, you don't have to get on in the dressing room. And you don't have to like a footballer.
No.
Like, I don't care if Bellingham's the big knobhead.
Yeah.
If he puts an England shirt on and plays well, I win.
Yeah.
I don't need him to come round for dinner. I don't need to like him.
I'd like him to come round for dinner.
You'd love that. But and it's nice if you do get that. I always say Juan Mata, what a great, you know, person.
He had a lovely tapas restaurant.
Lovely guy. You don't have to be that. There was something else I wanted to mention. Oh, yeah.
Just
to America. American things.
Fuck yeah.
A few people have been messaging in about like the level of quality of punditry in America. I mean, obviously, we've spoken a lot about the level of quality in the UK, and we were having a bit of laugh over the Euros about how we have this issue in the UK now where certain pundits are very professional and then they flip and become like what we are, like F this, F that. It's quite a funny, you know, they're basically exposing themselves as scripted, you could say frauds, but scripted in the sense that there's their professionalism, which that makes them popular, and then they switch to something else. The American audience, and get in the comments, apparently they have to put up with a lot of really bad assessment of football. Prime example being the FA Cup final when Bruno passed it to Maynou and a commentator said he's missed it that shot, which is, you know, scary to think. But then you get a lot of people like, I think they get people like Steve Nicol, Shaka Hislop, Craig Burley as their representatives on ESPN and stuff. And yeah, I do think that the worldwide audience, if maybe they are, maybe their pundit is not great. But then again, I look at what they have with Kate Abdu and Henri
That's
Carragher.
The jewel in the crown,
that,
isn't
that
it?
Is good. I think that competes with anything we've got in the UK. But
well, I think, you know, I watch a lot of NFL and I've done for like last 8 years. But the part
NFL's good. Even in this country, it's good.
But I think the part of that I love is the Americana. So like, I like the American coverage. I like Americans speaking about it because it just feels more natural. Whereas when we have, you know, I've done stuff and I'm out of my depth probably talking about, not out of my depth, but like...
You're always out of your depth.
Yeah, I'm always out of my depth. Well, we aren't bands.
Where's our bands in the bath? Southgate.
I like the Americana of it. So I can understand from a football perspective, if you're speaking on the Premier League, you almost want that authority. But then where does that authority lie? Because CBS also do another show and it might be good, but like Nigel Rio-Coke is on it as well. But it shouldn't be the level of...
Remember him?
Yeah, good. Once bumped into him in a nightclub in Birmingham.
Nice lad.
Very nice lad. Played for Villa at the time, but he was all right. But like, it should just be if you're a good pundit, whereas, yeah, some of the stuff that's come, you know, we spoke about that clip as well, where that the person was like, Messi and Ronaldo have gone, so we've got the next sort of coming of Christ in Jude Bellingham and Christian Pulisic, which is just like, take your blinkers off.
They always put Pulisic in.
Yeah.
Like even on the chatting United stand, that Pulisic will always get mentioned. The Americans love Pulisic. I can't wait till the Americans get a good player.
They've just got knocked out of the Copa America in the group stages. Yeah. They're hosting a World Cup in 2 years.
Pulisic should have been a good player about 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And he's ended up being...
I think he was like, they
Jack
wanted...
Grealish?
Not even that good. I think
where would you put Pulisic if he wasn't American and he was English in the Premier League? What level? Madison?
Yeah, probably around that.
Yeah,
I think they want him to be so good that there's so much hype.
They want him to be Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah, they want him to be that. Just and especially with this World Cup coming, like Canada have done better than them in the Copa America.
Yeah,
with Jesse Marsh who they turned down. So no, I think this is like, you know, we spoke about it on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. We'd love to go out there. You start your 12:30s at 4 a.m., 5 a.m. You finished whole day 12 p.m. We'd be adding something different.
New York penthouse. We'll do a few vlogs and then we'll present CBS or NBC Premier League coverage. But, you know, on a serious note, though, we are being serious, actually, getting contact. But I think that's the evolution for American sport, because one of the things I like to watch NFL, I don't watch all of it because it's on late and there's a lot to watch, and it's a long game, but I do like it. And what I do like about the coverage, even when they have on Sky, is that the people who are talking aren't always ex-players.
Yeah.
And American sport's really good at that. Like, you get, like, really good... They have it with the golf as well. I can't remember what his name is. They do it with a lot of their sport, where they've got people who speak really, really well who didn't play the game. And it works. That works really well in America. So I think that what they need to do is... They just don't have the authority on football, do they?
No.
Because it's not their sport.
You know, Red Zone, which is great, which is something that needs to be implemented more over here. But Scott Hansen on that, like, he's a legend in his own right now because of one doing 8 hours. It's a bit like Jeff Stelling in one regard, but just a bit different and probably a little bit better.
All I'd say to the American audience is it can get better. You need to follow more of your American sport sort of process with regards to getting people like us on. And also, it could be worse. At least you haven't got Keys and Gray on BN, because that literally is like watching some sort of spoof fly on the wall documentary.
It's
actually comedy. It's comedic, that is.
It's like Last of the Summer Wine, if anyone used to watch that back
you
in
see
the day.
You see Keys, something props in his head. He takes a little note and he's smiling. He goes, they'll have like Dwight York on. So Dwight, Sir Alex Ferguson, probably not actually as good as Howard Wilkinson when you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and he also does that thing where
good one, Keezy, good one.
They've had the conversation off air. Remember when he was doing it with Schmeichel, and Schmeichel was obviously gone to him like, oh, I think Thomas Tuchel's going to United. So he's like, that's gospel. And Peter's obviously gone, don't bring it up on air. Go, well, I heard United might be interested in a new manager from Germany, Peter. And he's like, well, I don't know. Tuchelite, and he's just like, shut the fuck up.
And he still gets into arguments on Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, it's just...
I think that is a...
Imagine them at a wedding. He really would be the guy who says, get Bon Jovi on. He's got his tie around his head. Come on, Gray. They'll love it. Come on. No, I'm doing Andy Gray. He'd be like, leave it, Richard. I'm not doing that. I've done it every fucking wedding this summer. We're not doing it.
After the daughters of people.
Well, you've gone too far. you've gone too far. We should be the... No, we don't want to be the new Keys and Gray.
Who's Keys and who's Gray?
No, I don't want to be. You're hairier than me. Right. I think we've covered everything. Nice to be back. Great to be back talking about Premier League.
Yeah, I'm excited. And we've got a Fantasy Premier League as well, which we're going to start up. I think...
We'll get the link in for you for next week for that.
I still need to be punished for last season's Goldbridge, but I think this year we're going to be looking at fantasy football. There's an EFL version out as well, which might be one step too far for you.
I want to do that. I definitely want to pick a team
in each league
that we sort of have a section at the end of the podcast. A lot of people will leave at that point, but we're going to be committed to it. We want to put something into that, and... obviously you're going to take Blues from League One, but
you could take a rival. That might be like your way of, you know, getting involved with me a little bit more.
I want to do that, because I think, like,
when you take
we do stuff with Solihull Moors and they'll be our team in the National League, but I'd like to have a team from each of the EFL leagues where it's sort of like a football manager game, but we don't actually control it. But that bloody idiot missed a penalty.
Well, look how invested we were at the Solihull Moors final, you know.
And you lot could do that at home, because you could compare it and go, I've picked Leighton Orient.
Well, I also get your suggestions in, because there's a new comment system on...
I might go Charlton in League One.
What, because of... What's his name?
Who?
We went out, we did that thing there, didn't we?
Yeah. It's like a mini Old Trafford.
What's around here, League One? Shrewsbury, lovely. We could have a night out in Shrewsbury. Some great pubs in Shrewsbury.
I tell you what, if you are anybody who works at clubs in social media and everything like that, there's a whole little clip where we could go, this is the team we've picked.
Yeah.
Get in our emails now.
Also,
that's football@gmail.com. That's footballmedia@gmail.com.
If you're, you know, like Exeter,
LinkedIn.
Great city, good pubs.
It's a long way to go.
2 hours.
Is it?
From London.
On a train.
On a train. It doesn't stop.
It's up near, Exeter's down south, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was going up to Newcastle. Yeah. I can't find it, Will. I'm sure it's near Newcastle.
And
it's near Pie Face.
And one SPL club.
You can't go Rangers or Celtic.
No. And we'll probably go Hibs.
I've always liked...
Hibs.
No, I've always liked...
Hibs. Correct.
It's kicking me under the table. Something's going on with Hibs. I've always liked Hibs. I think it's the orange kit.
They're playing green.
Green and white. Green and white kit. And Pittodrie's a lovely ground. Aberdeen. Easter Road.
Yeah. Well done.
Greatest ever player to play for Hibs. Any players to play for Hibs? Will Fish was on loan there last
year. Adam Lafondre played there.
Yeah. Hibs, well known for Edinburgh.
Maybe we won't get invited anymore.
We will.
Aberdeen it is.
Hibs to break the Rangers Celtic axis of, I nearly said no. Not abdomination. Yeah, not evil.
No, just get involved. If you're listening, get involved. Why? And why?
That's going to be a bit of fun, actually.
There might be some narratives.
It's definitely going to get nicked. Neville and Lineker have a scout, a spy there, but we are definitely going to do this. We're going to make it interesting in the EFL this year and the SPL. We're here to save football, and this is a way to save those leagues, or help those leagues.
Well, also, there's always like interesting narratives. Wrexham's such an obvious one because it's out there, but there's, you know, or we see different things with Exeter because of Alfie and that podcast that you went on. There's different ones in like.
I might go Notts County in League Two, oldest club in the world.
Yeah,
that's going to set people off. It's actually Sheffield, and then
yeah.
Thanks everyone for watching. Lots to get your teeth into. Get out there, you sharks. Thanks, Will.
Thanks, Mark.
Take care.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step 1. Go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step 2. Collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step 3. Play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games. All for free?
Step 4. Unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.